have a situation.
What is it?
I've been watching the movie The Big Short, and then my mortgage renewal is coming up, and I'm panicking, and I'm not sure what to do because everywhere I turn, I think I'm making like the wrong decision.
Well, that's what usually is with the average, even the above average person when it comes to mortgages. You're just lost. Everybody's lost. I don't know what I'm doing. It's so much money. That's why we've got the one to go to, Phil Craig. He's a mortgage broker in Ottawa that will get you an unbelievable deal. Have you heard of him, Jay?
I have, but will he let me like make it look like I made some decisions? Because I have my wife there, and I just want make it look cool to my kids that I made the decision. Will he let me do that?
He will let you sign, even if you're not signing a real document. He'll slide you one over that says Jason, and you can sign right underneath it. Okay? And not only that, if you go see him, he will hook you up with $300 if you tell him the soccer snob sent you. Somebody's got to do this. Okay, please, someone move and do it for us. Not for your family, for us. So he will get you a quick mortgage approved same day. He's got no bias opinion because he's not affiliated with any bank. Phil Craig, mortgage broker. Look him up. He will get you the best. I'm going to start with a hard-hitting question for Carl Haworth here. When you're at a mall, you're Christmas shopping, things are going great in your life, you get on an escalator. Do you walk up the escalator, or do you let it bring you to the next floor?
That's a great question. That's a great question. I would say, generally speaking, I'm just standing there. I'm standing to the right. I'm letting them go by.
Can I say something?
I'm in the airport. Then I'm probably walking.
I was hoping you weren't that person, because I can say with like a lot of a real validity here that you're a psychopath. If you walk up something that's moving you already, like you're not, it's just strange.
Yeah.
Did I infringe on Steve or Jay? Do you walk?
No, I think Carl nailed it. Like, if you're in the airport, you have to walk on those walking escalators because, like, you feel like you're, like, a superhero in Marvel or something. Like, it's brilliant.
Oh, true. Or you're just getting trampled on by everybody else in this crazy rush.
Sometimes I try and beat the people on the treadmill, and they're just standing there, and I'm walking. Like, I'm just going to walk. Like, I'll be faster. And they always – and it kills me. I'm, like, sweating profusely. But up the escalator, I do – while it's moving, just because if there's no one in front of me, I'm just moving. I'm keeping it going. That's all. Down, no. Up, yeah.
Psycho, Mark.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll let that slide. So today, as you heard, we've got Carl Haworth, a Canadian professional soccer player, turning full professional about 8 years ago, signing with the Ottawa Fury. An amazing career with the Fury in the NASL and USL, which saw him become the captain of the team, the player with the most appearances ever for the Ottawa Fury. When the Fury ceased operations in 2019, Carl moved to USL Power Indy 11. Or you still are, right? You got extended?
Yeah, another year? Correct. I had a 2-year contract, yeah. So going back there this season.
Also, he's got a cap for the Canadian national team. And he's been moving into the coaching, technical director roles with some community clubs. Welcome to this ever professional podcast, my friend.
Thanks for having me, guys. Super excited.
Before we get into anything really here, I need to know this as a human. You have a blue check on your Facebook. Do you apply for that or does that come to you? Like, does someone email you and say, like, are you, send me your fingerprint? Like, are you really Carl Hallward? Like, how does this work?
I would say for generally speaking, you probably have to reach out and do some sort of application process. But we got the media department or communications department at Fury kind of took care of a bunch of us. One of our, I think it was the second year, maybe 2015, and got us all verified on Facebook and Instagram. But Twitter is a more difficult one.
I was just going to say,
I verified there
on both, and then you didn't have a blue check on Twitter. So I'm thinking now, as a matter of principle, you're less active on Twitter than you are on Facebook and Instagram.
That's very accurate. Very accurate. So it allows for some Carl Howarth imposters out there on Twitter, but not on Instagram.
If I was verified on any of those, I would, oh my God, I would, it'd be hard for me not to show it off to my students at school. I'd wear a shirt with a check mark verified. Like, it would be like, for that day, weren't you just like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was a special moment, a big milestone in my career. I mean, it is kind of cool. I don't even really know what it means still, but it's nice to have when other guys on your team don't have it because they get envious of it.
Yeah. Oh, that's got to be some great banter. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
So before all the glitz and glamour of the NASL, how annoying were Steve and I leading up to your Fury career with the PDL?
Man, not at all, guys. You know, I have such tremendous respect for you guys and, you know, the reason I came to Ottawa in the first place. So I couldn't say a negative thing about any of you guys.
That's pretty nice to say, though, Mark, that he said that. He's a great person. I think he just didn't see the, like, meetings that you and I had to strategically blitz him, like, from different angles at different times on different social media. Yeah. Like, it was, like, a full-on plan to get you to come here because we were like, we need this person to try and get over the edge. We need this guy who can score a goal out of nothing or from a set play or like from a free kick, from just anything. I didn't know how good of a leader you were back then. Like, we can get into that maybe, but just like that difference, that cutting edge, we were like, this is the one. That was like priority number one.
It was like those, you know, you see in the movies, like a map with strings going everywhere and pins. Like, that's kind of what we had going.
The mob boss.
Just with your face, like right there. So, like, I'm going to whip the joke aside here because I know we recruited you hard to come to the PDL, but you were like 23 at the time. You'd already won PDL. I got you a trial at Harrisburg, a mediocre team, and that didn't work out for you. How close were you to packing it in completely before you came to PDL?
I was extremely close. I mean, a couple of times, I guess, throughout my career, you have those moments where you go, is this worth it? Should I keep pushing it? Should I maybe just, you know, I got a business degree, maybe just focus on that and start building a career that way. But yeah, definitely that was a tough moment, you know, kind of exhausted all resources, it felt. You know, I got drafted, got released, won the PDL, you know, didn't get my trials. It didn't go the right way for me. They ended quite quickly and nothing else was really opening up. So I was actually working at a garage door manufacturing facility in Barrie at the time, winter. Mm-hmm. So having those conversations with you guys kind of got me to refocus again. And yeah, like I said, super, super thankful for you guys for being as persistent as you were, because you were very persistent.
I love the word persistent.
For England, like, you're the perfect player to play in, like, even like somewhere like a lower league in Spain, maybe. I don't know. Like, I don't get it.
I just wasn't. I mean, I feel like it's something that's easier said than done. And now, you know, we're 7-8 years later on. It's a more natural thing to do, I suppose.
Yeah.
Back then, just wasn't really educated on it. There wasn't too many Canadians that had done that at the time, you know, when I was growing up. So pretty unaware of it and maybe thinking that it was a bit tougher to do than I realized. Never really gave it a go.
The only reason I bring that up is because you have a passport. You're born in UK. Wow. You have the passport. That's like the biggest hurdle. And then the second thing is, God, like watching you play, like I you know, I brought my son to all the NASL games and the USL games, and you are like a Spanish thinking player, or like a very just creative, even from the back, wherever position you are, you hate losing the ball. You're gritty. You can find a way to score. Like, it's just, I was just thinking about it last night. I'm like, this is the question I have to ask him, even though it's so obvious, but it's like, it makes sense. Like, it wasn't like something that was like in front of you and you just got like lows.
Yeah. 100%. I was also like at the homeboy, you know, I wanted to stay with my family, stay close to family. That's why I ended up going to school not too far. You know, I was 2 hours from home, even though I was in the States and could travel back and see them. So, yeah, it was something I never necessarily wanted to do just as my personality type. So, again, yeah. I didn't explore it and just, yeah, never came
about. Was the NASL angle when we brought you to the Fury, like, is that kind of like, was that in your mind when you came? Like, okay, well, I'll give PDL a go one more time because of this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
100%. That's what it was. It was, let me go there and see what I can do. I know the coach, whoever it's going to be, is going to be around. They start the next year. I'll be in the city. Excellent exposure. Yeah, and that's one of the best choices I've made in my career.
What about when it happened? Like, we're playing PDL that season, you know, all that, you're doing amazing, like scoring 5 million goals, doing your thing. Mark Dos Santos, like, this big announcement comes, like, he's in town, you know, it's like, welcome to Manchester, Tevez. Like, it was like, that's what it was. And so how did he, because I know you signed before our season was even over. How did that come? Like, did Mark call you, or did you have a big meeting with John? Did you know, like, walk us through, like, how that came about? Did he go to the houses, or were they too scared to go to the houses?
No way. Mark Dos Santos was going to those apartments. No, I mean, you guys know he was around. I think he came in July 1st, maybe, or at least announced then. And he was around. He came to training quite frequently. I'm sure you guys had conversations with him in terms of, you know, what players to maybe keep an eye on.
Yeah.
And so just speaking with him a couple times after training, just him introducing himself and just letting me know that he was looking at me and everything. And so he was around for training, which I think was a really, really big thing, because you got to see how a guy is on the training field, you know, every single day, every single drill, you know, it really tells a lot about a player. So you could definitely see where his mind was at with that. And then, we just met. I actually didn't sign before the season finished. We had basically verbally agreed, but no signature, no contract until much later on in the year. But we met for coffee kind of right after the PDL season before he went back to Barry, and he basically laid it down for me. This is where I see you. I want to sign you. This is what the contract's going to be, and, you know, we'll speak soon. So it wasn't much after that season, but having him around every single day in training, or maybe not every day, a couple times a week or so, certainly helped.
Do you know what I would have, like, you know what I would have picked you for? Not only because you would score goals in training, you were just like a beast. Like, you set the tone and just raised the level for everyone. And plus, if I was a player, I'd always want to beat you because you would piss me off if you scored against me in training. It's like, unfortunately, when you would play with like the academy kids and you'd be in goal and stuff like that, just that you love football. Like, it's through your, like, every fiber of your being. And that you did it almost every training. And Steve and I, Mark was terrified pacing. He's like, is he going to get hurt? Is he going to get hurt? We're done. Season's done. Get him out of goal. Get him out of goal now, Jason. I'm like, no, it's so fun watching. Me and Steve are, like, giggling watching. Mark's like, get him out. Mark's, like, nervous. But I think your love, you don't really have to answer to this, Mark. You can take the next question. But it's like that. I that's what I really loved about you. And that's something that, I mean, every coach wants their player to have, that love of football and the joy. You were there like an hour and a half before training, you know?
Let me drop one thing for that. Cause like, Mark, you nailed it, Jay. Like, it's exactly the situation that happened, and Mark would like lose it and you were the opposite. And I was like in between. And I remember there's one like where we asked guys who hadn't played a lot to come and play a game against like a U19 Fury or whatever. And Carl was there like an hour before with all the guys, and he was in net. And then he wanted to start the game in net. And Jay, like, you and I were considering it. We're like, whatever. It's like Rooney. He always says he's Rooney. It's funny. And then Mark like Mark was sweating. I had to actually go get Carl and be like, Carl, you got to get out of the net. Like, not even for you. This is for Mark's well-being right now. Like, great.
Yeah, I was probably so devastated too.
You were. You had your glove. Yeah. You had your own gloves. I was like, what's wrong with this guy? But I could send him.
That's good. Anyways, so good.
I totally so forgot good. About that. That's fantastic. Now, I'm going to, like, the super draft for the MLS just happened a couple of days ago. And that sparked the question in me for you, because you went to Niagara University. You got drafted by the Impact.
Yeah.
Did you feel like once you were drafted, like, because now I'm thinking of all these people that are drafted, do you get a fair shake when you're a draftee, you come into camp, or is it just like, this is our draft, let's use them for numbers for now and then piss them off later? Like, what, or am I wrong?
Yeah, that's pretty much my understanding of it anyway. And from people who I know have gone through it the same way. And my situation was a little bit different too. Like, so the draft happened in, I think it was January, and then most guys just report to camp and you know, give it a shot there. I wanted to finish my degree at the time. So I would go in for, you know, maybe a week at a time, train with them, go back to school, do my courses, go for reading week, you know, go back to school, do my exams. And then I went back once I did my final exams for a couple of weeks. And then, yeah, that was it. Just kind of kicked to the curb. But I'd say given a fair chance in terms of the amount of time that they gave me. But yeah, you never really feel like, again, it's going to be different for everybody. Some people are going to have success stories.
Who
as
was
well,
the
but
coach?
Yeah, it was Jesse Marsh.
Oh, it was Marsh.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, the GM there actually really, really liked me, Matt Jordan. And from my understanding, he was really pushing for them to sign me. But it didn't work out. And yeah, it was definitely tough. I think maybe looking back, the only thing I would change is go straight there for preseason, you know, give myself a full kind of 6 weeks or so to prove myself. And then you can always go back to school and finish up. But certainly not a regret, just reflection.
Yeah. So I'm going to throw this questioning into Jay's wheelhouse that he's going to love. Steve too, but Jay mostly. But anyway, you grew up in Barrie, which is like a smaller, it's not a small town, but it's a smaller city. Your youth coaching growing up, like, I think I remember, if I'm not mistaken, your dad coached you a lot, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
But in Barrie, are you part of like the GTA landscape? Are you playing teams in Toronto, or is it like Barrie centric? So how did that work, and how was the youth development growing up there?
Yeah, we were lucky that we were kind of paired into the GTA, and we got to play against those teams. You know, for us growing up, Dixie, Mississauga, you know, tons of teams in that area, which helped us because we were the kind of big fish in a small pond. If we played in the Huronia district, it would have, you know, it would have hindered our development, you know, going and playing in Nowen Sound and Sega Beach and all that sort of stuff. So we got lucky that we were kind of grouped into that. But in saying that, because we were such a low kind of ranked region, we started off in like Division 4 or something like that when I was U12, and we won promotion every year until we made it up into the OYSL kind of 5 years after that.
Wow.
Which I guess is the OPDL nowadays. So we were super, super fortunate to have a good group of guys that, you know, from age 12 to 18, 19, we stuck together. It was the same group, you know, added a couple guys here and there. My dad coached, we had another German assistant coach, guys who knew soccer and grew up with soccer. So we just had like the perfect kind of mix of good coaching, committed coaching, and the right group of guys that, you know, were competitive and talented enough to compete in those leagues.
Yeah, my follow-up question to that, Mark, because I love this question, is like, would you, and I wrote it down, it's like the longest, dumbest, stupidest Lego.
It's in crayon.
Question in the world. Yeah, exactly. It's so stupid. It's like, if you could go back and tap your coach, your dad, whatever, the assistant to, on the shoulder, okay, you could go back during that U9, U13, between that, those golden years, to something to improve the game of each player on the team, including yourself. Mm. If you're going to be honest, because some of the criticisms, and I'm not criticizing the team, I'm just like generally, and you can really speak to that because you made it. And I try and get this out of professional guys we that we interview and they never answer is, I guess it's the way I'm asking the question, 5 years to ask it, but it's like, did you make it in spite of the coaching, or did you make it, like, were you the only one? Like, is that a success story that one guy made it out of 18 players? And I'm not taking digs at anybody, but so that's part of the question. It's like, and also, would you go back and what would you say? Like, guys, you really need to work on this. Like, I see the future. And I, you know, I didn't make it at Montreal Impact for some reason, or, you know, whatever. It's like, I could have made it further. You could make it further. And I'm not just saying that because you're here. Like, we rate you so highly. I rate you so highly. And it makes me so mad. It's like, so what would you say to them if you could go back?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I'm still really good friends with a lot of those guys. And we talk about this stuff from time to time. And I always say, like, I was not the most talented guy in our team. You know, I wasn't the biggest, wasn't the most athletic, wasn't the most talented in terms of ability, God-given ability. You know, there was other guys that if they had the right mentality and attitude, would be where I'm at, if not higher up. So the biggest thing for me that I always took away from it was my own personal mentality, that motivation, intrinsic motivation to make it, you know, from the first time I can remember having thoughts, it was, I'm going to be a professional soccer player and nothing else. Like, I never once considered another career path. So it was just in me from such a young age. And I would struggle to say where it came from, but having that mentality is really what separates kids these days, because you see kids all the time with, you know, this incredible ability, you know, can dribble past 2, 3, 4 players, you know, doing rainbows, Maradona spins on the ball, you know, but if they don't apply themselves correctly and if they don't have that right mindset, it's useless.
Yeah. Okay. So to add on to that, sorry, Mark, that was honestly a great answer. And I remember you saying that to like my son before, and Steve organized the whole like Zoom thing and it was brilliant. Mm-hmm. He still remembers that. But like, so let's, you're the only one out of your group to actually.
Yeah.
How many played like university?
So
like,
there was maybe 6 guys that went to university from my team to play. Okay. A few of them in Canada, and there was actually 3 of us that went to Niagara University.
Oh wow!
They just lose interest, I guess, over time. You know, different things come and go. Maybe they weren't as focused on soccer and they, you know, change paths. You know, you grow a lot in those years as well, and, you know, get all these different ideas of what you want to do with your life. So they never really pushed it past university. So to say they failed, it wouldn't really be fair. I guess they just really didn't have that drive and desire to want to go and take.
Yeah. Well, that's, level.
I mean, university was enough for them, you know?
Yeah, well, it showed in your original answer to our questions. Is like, you were 23, PDL didn't work. You won PDL, Harrisburg didn't work out. Like, most people would have quit a year or two before that, right? And that's where it shows your mentality. And I'm going to keep that mentality question going, because you were named captain of the Fury. Now, just me being like super nosy all the time, and I want to know like the weird little things. How did that come? Like, was that a, because we've talked about this on the show, like, our captains, does that band really have a meaning like it used to, or is it a big deal? Like, how did that captain, who was the coach that made you captain, and was it a big meeting? Did he ask you, or did he just appoint you? Did he give you the choice? How did that all roll out?
Yeah. So I was probably first represented the Fury as a captain in, I think it was 2016, maybe 2017, under Paul Dalglish. But the way he did it is, he had a leadership group that was kind of, you know, defined by the coaching staff, a group of 4 or 5 people that would kind of carry the team and lead the team. And I was a part of that. Lance was our captain at the time, when I was kind of an assistant, if you will. And then I think it was just a game where he was injured. It just kind of got passed down to me, and it was, you know, my responsibility. But to say like, it's more symbolic, I suppose. I don't think it generally means too much to have that, although you are proud when you wear it and you represent your club. It's more a testament to, you know, your hard work and your dedication and your leadership ability every single day. And it's just going to translate that way. So armband or not, I'm going to lead the team the same way. I'm sure most captains would say that. It seems like a pretty parallel thought, I guess. Sign of a decent leader, I would say as well. You don't need that to be a leader. You just are one. It's that. And then when Julian took over, he kind of kept me as a captain, and that was it. We did a vote actually when Nicola came in the next year. You know, you do your preseason a few weeks, you go down to Florida, you team bonding and stuff like that. And then the staff will kind of announce we're voting for captains, and it gets the same thing. It's just going to naturally bring those leaders to the top, right? People are going to see it every single day, you know, in meetings, in meal rooms, training. So just kind of naturally.
And it's also like for you, I mean, I don't want to speak for you or, but I'm speaking as like a fan of yours and the team. I think sometimes even an armband can be almost like a tool. Cause like you were always a good player. You were playing really well, but once you got the armband, I felt like your trajectory went even higher. Like it gave you that extra confidence. Like even if it was subconscious or consciously, you now got to like a whole different level.
Yeah, I'd say certainly subconsciously kind of taking on that extra responsibility without putting too much thought into it, you know, and just naturally getting that armband, you know, getting that confirmation, I guess, from either your staff or your peers that, you know, they see you as a leader. Yeah. And to take that on, I guess, yeah, it elevates you.
Yeah. Did you notice, and I'm going to flip here to like league play. We're talking about playing now, NASL. USL, was there a big drop in quality from NASL to USL?
I'd say at the time, generally speaking as a whole, I would say yes. The USL, it's come so far on, you know, in such short amount of time, you know, just over the last few years. The standard in the USL now is fantastic. But at the time, it seemed like the kind of more experienced, older, you know, more, you know, guys with bigger careers, longer careers chose NASL over USL at the time. The USL was more focused to those young guys, you know, draft picks that got released or academy kids. So there's definitely a disparity there, but I'm sure the top USL teams at the time would have competed in the NASL as well. No problem. You know, there was only, you know, somewhere in around 10 teams in the NASL. So the talent was, you know, there's only so many spots. So the talent was much higher in my opinion.
Yeah. What, with that, I'm just going to say out loud that I forgot the question I was going to ask. So that's the first thing we're going to mention. Second thing is now I do remember, see, when I talk, I should have talked about something else and then come back, but I'm going to say that we're an open book on this podcast. So I almost passed out. The MLS and the USL are two leagues in the USA for our viewers who don't really understand it. There's others, but whatever. These are the two highest. Is there a direct or somewhat of a feeling of some sort of link between the two? Because you don't see a lot of USL players like being signed into the MLS when realistically, like it's an entire league in the MLS's backyard, but it looks like they just step over you and then look elsewhere. Is that a feeling that I have, or is that just?
Yeah, no, I would say so, 100%. I always say that the, you know, North American soccer leagues, they don't function like the rest of the leagues and across the globe. You know, it's franchise models. It's money. You buy your franchise, and then you build it from there. You buy into the league, you build it from there. You know, with the MLS, your contract's signed with the league, not with the teams. It's a, you know, much different way of doing things. And then to talk to your point of the link between USL and MLS, there's nothing really concrete there. I mean, there's affiliate sides, you know, teams have agreements, whether they're contractual or not. You see it more the other way where the MLS teams and their affiliates will send players down to, you know, train or be loaned out to get a game. here and there, but yeah, it's pretty rare, I suppose, for guys, you know, having a really good year in USL and then moving up to the MLS. It doesn't happen that often. Whereas, you know, look at England, you can have a good first five games to your season and all of a sudden one could be blowing up and you could get a move right away. So it's certainly challenging that way, but it's just the way the system's set up, the way the model is, the franchisee model, and it's a product of that.
Yeah. So the Ottawa Fury, I looked up the other day. I mean, we all worked for the Fury before, and it gave us great things. I mean, it gave us a great platform to ply our trade, and you as well. And I saw the word Ottawa Fury was this, like, and it kind of stung for a second because it's no longer there. Does that hurt you? Do you feel like something is gone from something? Like, how much did it hurt you as a former captain and player for that to cease to exist? And second part of that question, do you kind of regret that decision of them ceasing to exist rather than flipping to the CPL?
Tough question. First off, I was devastated when it happened. I mean, we found out the night before the press conference. Julian was the GM at the time, and he called us all and informed us, gave us all everything we needed to know and all that. It was just the night before. I mean, obviously there's rumors of it, but being on the inside, you never expected. There's no signs from the inside that anything was kind of unstable or was moving that way. So I think it took a lot of people by surprise. And I was at that press conference the next morning when they broke the news. And yeah, that was a tough room to be in. There was definitely some tears shed. Some of the people that have been there from the start, like Carrie McKay, for example, you know, standing with her and seeing everything that they worked so hard to build just kind of come down and crashing down the way it did. I would say the fact that they didn't exist anymore and I was leaving kind of helped. You know, it's not like I left Ottawa Fury and they were still going on and playing and I wasn't a part of that. To speak to the point of should they, in hindsight, have just flipped to the CPL, easy answer is probably yes. I'm sure they've had conversations with league representatives from day one. You know, they helped frame and build their model, their league, their format. You know, they leaned on Ottawa Fury head office and general manager for information, for insight. So it was a working relationship between them. I know there was all this talk coming up that there was this animosity and hatred between parties and all that. It came down to the business decision and they weren't ready. I'm sure if they stayed in the USL, you know, stayed as a team, you know, as CPL grew, as even just over this last year, how much it grew in tough circumstances, I didn't see a situation where the Fury would exist and them not be in the CPL.
No, it's a tough conversation.
Wasn't the right time.
It sucks. Like, because that's where, it's hindsight so easy that you should have just flipped and all this stuff. And I mean, there's 1,000 moving parts from both angles for anything to work like that. So there's no right or wrong answer at this point. Now, we had Julian de Guzman on the show a couple months back, and he's involved in Barry 1812 Shire Nottingham. I don't even know. There's so many words in the name, but you're from Barry. Have they approached you in any way for anything?
No approaching. We've had conversations, you know, I congratulated Julian on that. I know some people involved in the organization as well. So just reached out and congratulated them and, just kind of talked about how great it is for Canadian soccer and to see someone like Julian involved in another project like that is incredible, you know, for so many reasons. So, certainly spoke to everyone.
Yeah, more the biggest reason there. Yeah, the biggest reason being, how many Carl Howarts can we pull out of Barry now that there's a proper setup, as opposed to the whatever was there before. So 100%. I mean, anything like that in Canada and smaller regions is perfect to pop up everywhere.
Mark, let me jump in and derail you as I always do, but I got to ask it before before I forget. And it's I probably have asked Carl because Carl has been kind enough to come on and talk to my U11 team and stuff like that. Like, just that's his character. And it's to bring back Jay as well because he loves when we get into coaching and all that. So I'll start it off with, as you were growing up, you were involved in like national teams, provincial teams, and you went to Niagara, and obviously you got to the levels you did. So to touch on a stereotype that I think exists and is maybe going away a bit in North American soccer, but bigger versus smaller players. Like, I think, and probably when you grew up, it still was there where it was a very, you know, you didn't often see very many little players coming out. Little's the worst way to put it, by the way. So I don't know why I said it. Like I was like, what are you doing?
Messi-like stature.
Messi-like stature is exactly the polished way to ask you this question. But yeah, you didn't see those. And I always would say like 10 years ago, you know, why are there no Iniestas and Messis and those types of players coming out, like, or Pires or whatever. And you fall in that category. I think that's what Jay was getting at with going to a Spain or a league where your strengths would be appreciated, because in soccer, like, and it's the same as becoming in hockey where the St. Louis have more room in the game. How much did that hinder you? Or did you actually, I want to know if a coach, and you don't have to say his name, but actually said to you, listen, like, you're not going to play for Canada, or you're not going to play for the provincial team, or you're going to struggle because you're small. Because I think what Jay's really getting at, of how he admires you, and I would echo it, like, to me, that means zero. Like, you are an unbelievable soccer player who could play right back, right wing, striker, center mid. And you do that because you're dynamic, because of your brain in the game, and because of your quality. So I'll stop rambling. But, you know, maybe speak to me a little bit about that aspect growing up in your career.
Yeah, I would say the grassroots of soccer, you know, back when I was growing up, in the development side of things, it wasn't really there. Their mindset wasn't on development. It wasn't on, you know, taking the top guys or whatever, improving these players. It was more about seeing the guys who had developed physically earlier and seeing how much faster and stronger they were at the time, and trying to use that to the advantage and to win games based off of the biggest, fastest, strongest guys at the time.
Yeah.
That was my personal experience with it. And actually trying out for the provincial team, I always, you know, got the call down to go and try out for the provincial team. It was me and three or four other guys from the Barrie region. And I never made it. U14, U15, U16, cut every single year, and literally sat me down in the office and did say those words, Steve, that I just was too small and not physical enough, not able to compete. So I'm not sure if you researched that and then asked that question, because that was pretty much exactly my experience. But yeah, that's 100%.
The fact that you were actually told that, I guess it's bang on, I'm a genius, whatever, and not so much talk about it. But like the next piece to that would be, you know, my thinking is like the nerdy coach, like there's your attributes could be used like they were later in the NASL as a right back, you know? So obviously I think to your point that was the thinking there. I want to give you credit for this though, because I think you're obviously aware of it. You know, we have a previous relationship and stuff, but you did, I can't remember how you labeled it, so I apologize, futsal training, whatever, with you and Nikki and
PFT.
And Tommy. Yeah. What, PFT?
PFT, pro futsal training.
That's right. So I put my son in that, who's Messi-esque in stature and continues to be. You definitely didn't do it. I know it's a total different realm to a provincial team at U16, but you've actually, you're Coach Carl to him as opposed to the professional soccer player. So that speaks volumes, first of all, to how good of a coach you can and will be, and how you've changed that mindset. So I think we need more people who've had your experience. From the little you've got into coaching, and I don't know why I'm using little all the time. I'm actually really upset with myself, and I want to like video edit as we go the fact that I'm saying little all the time. But the amounts you've been in, because you're still playing, do you see that changing? Maybe that's like just a really obvious question to ask. And is that something in the back of your mind as you do these coaching things, you know, pro futsal, Gloucester, whatever it is?
Yeah, 100%. With my experience and the way I, you know, developed and went through the system, it was definitely a conscious thing on my behalf from a coaching side of things to focus on that. And I'm probably, you know, over biased to those littler people now, you know, little people, if you will.
Now it's
old, yeah, so episode. Yeah, exactly. You say it so much, it just, you know.
Actually, the roll offs are going to join us. They'll be on in a minute.
Perfect. So yeah, definitely conscious thing to for me to focus on, and actually just looking for talent and ability and trying to develop players regardless of size, speed, you know, because that all changes. It can change so rapidly.
Yeah.
And I would say that, yeah, with my little, there you go again, with my small amounts of involvement in coaching, I definitely see that more so than when I was growing up, that, you know, they're not just trying to take those bigger, faster, stronger guys. Now they are trying to develop things. It's promising.
The best part is people are still doing that. There's obviously a lot less, but there's still the mentality of let's win this U10 game at all cost, and not develop. And, oh, look, one player from our 7,000 members in our club, or our 8,000 members, or 3,000 members, whoever it is, all over Ontario, Canada, oh, they made it pro. One out of, that's like saying, like celebrating, like it's like the opposite. This is the worst connection in the world, but it's like I read this stat about abductions, and like it's like, you know, no, but people, no, but it relates. And we talked about it on the show, but it's like, you know, people are scared of their kids getting abducted. That's why they don't let them play outside to play soccer, right? There's a connection there, but no one announces, like, oh, today 500,000 kids did not get abducted in Ottawa. Just so everyone, because they don't announce that stuff, but it's like, you know, like for the coaching part of it, it's like they announce, oh, the one player that made it. It's like, I'd probably, Barry, you were probably the poster boy, but what about the 400 other kids that didn't go on to play? And I don't even mean play pro, but are still playing right now.
Yeah.
Like that to me is a sign of a good coach. Are they playing right now in our men's league where Mark, Steve, and I still play? It's like, are they playing right now? To me, that's a sign. Are they coaching? Are they giving back?
Yeah.
You know, that's where we need to like make sure that's the sign of success, not one player out of a million making it. You know?
Yeah. What about like, sorry, I don't want to beat it, Mark. I want to get back to you because I know
you're helping me because it's hard to transition from abduction.
Yeah, it's really, and I'm not going to say little anymore, but what about like when you had those talks? Now I'm fascinated by the actual conversation you had getting cut from provincial teams and stuff. So let's bring back bad memories, girl. But like, what about your pace at that time? Because your pace, like, and your burst, like your initial pace through like your first 3 yards is, to me, it's incredible. Like, were you at that level of speed back then? And was that not considered like, hey, let's put him on the right or left wing or something, like get him out of the mix if he's still too small? Did you have that pace, and was that ignored?
Yeah, no, I think that's probably the reason why I was still getting the look and still getting the chances, is because I had that. You needed it with all these big bruisers around.
Yeah.
You know, you had to, especially being the guy on the team who, you know, maybe scored the most goals, or teams would have maybe heard of, like, oh, we got to watch this guy. You know, they might man mark you, they might put bigger guys on you. So I needed that to in my game to be who I was. So yeah, just the quick turn of pace, the shiftiness I kind of always had. And that's what gave me the opportunities, I guess, to get a look.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So let's rip into some quick rapid fire questions before we let you go watch United beat Liverpool.
You mean Everton Sheffield Wednesday?
Yeah.
Great.
It's a big history between those two, actually. It's a pretty big game. Yeah. Would you rather give up showering for 2 weeks or your phone for 2 weeks?
Phone.
Great answer.
Right. Easy.
Human, Mark.
Yeah. You got to think about that. Think about that. People on their phones nowadays. That's a big
wrong week. Wrong generation. I think if I was a few years younger, it'd be the other way.
That's true. That's true. Jay still has a VCR, so that's the kind of thing we're rolling out. Do you have one soccer?
I don't right now, personally. I have a one soccer login that I use.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't personally subscribe.
The best PDL Fury player that you played with?
Oh, man.
Ooh.
PDL Fury player that I played with. You know what? I'm going to make so many people angry. Someone who would probably go under the radar, and I don't know if you guys would agree with this or if this is going to surprise you guys, but Yannick Becker.
Oh, not at all. I think he was unbelievable. Oh,
man, his talent level was unbelievable. like is dribbling at pace, going breezing past players. You know, it's probably part of the reason why I ended up getting signed to the Fury is playing with someone like him. So, yeah, I mean, there's so many.
Yeah, if he stayed fit, we probably would have won that entire thing.
Yeah,
that's a bad
Jacob memory. Jacob Barron too, and then the center mid, another kind of overlooked guy. He was unbelievable. Man, Eddie Jones that year was so good for us. Fozzie as well, obviously, was a rock for us at the back. The list.
Jacob Barron's a great one. Jacob Barron kind of, I don't know if I'm saying Barron now, but Barron, he's he fits into the whole, like, why didn't he get a look? He didn't fit the North American style type player. I'm actually surprised he didn't slide in somewhere, you know, and I don't follow him anymore, of course, but great pull there. Yeah. That was a quality player.
Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat?
Ha!
Neither. I'll give you a Mortal Kombat just for, is that the get over here?
Yeah, that's right. Scorpion.
Yeah.
The last non-soccer book that you read?
The last non-soccer book that I read, I think, was The Outsider by Stephen King.
Wow.
Love that. Ooh. Stephen King. I love Stephen King. Oh. Would you rather your only bathroom be an outhouse across the street or sleep in a wooden rocking chair?
Oh, no. That's a great question. You know, I can't sleep like sitting in something, like being on the plane or anything like that, on a bus. I can't do it. So it's got to be the outhouse.
Yeah. The last movie you watched?
The last movie I watched. I watched a bit of Wedding Crashers yesterday. That's always a classic.
Nice.
Last Start to Finish, I think, was Thor Ragnarok. We watched that the other day. Big Marvel guy, so always go back and rewatch those ones.
All right, last question before we let you get out of here. What's the best TV show you would recommend to us and our viewers here during this lockdown to watch?
I'm sure everybody's seen it by now. It's a recent one. It's the one that just comes to mind. It's The Queen's Gambit. Don't know if you guys have seen that yet, but check it out. It's apparently a pretty accurate representation of chess at the higher level as well, which is kind of cool.
So
Mark, one last question. I've got one last question.
I have one too.
Okay. Yeah. You got it's Carl, man. Like I could get
Carl. Let's go.
Actually, keep down. I need one. And you try to be as unpolitically correct as possible, but I know you're a good guy. So when you were with the Fury and you were in the houses, and for those who don't know, the houses were right downtown Ottawa in some seedy areas, which Mark and I always tried to fluff up to make better than they were. Although the houses themselves were nice. Do you have a story of being down there with the guys that you can tell us and just give it to us? Cause that was some environment.
I got a pretty good one. It's pretty disgusting though.
that's what we want.
We'll just go
this
for it.
What I'm searching for, Carl.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, just living in the market. I think King Edward and Murray area-ish.
Yep.
And so, you know, we'd train late and then we'd have not much to do for the next day. So we would go out from time to time in the market there. And one night in particular, went out with like a few guys. There's maybe four or five of us, and we're all coming back at whatever it was, 1:32 in the morning, coming back to the apartments there, and walking down the laneway to the part where all the apartments are, there was a human poo on the driveway down the alleyway to get to our houses that we had to sidestep.
Oh God.
That's
amazing.
In your mind, did you think Steve and Mark emailing me never mentioned this moment?
I mean, I think everybody who's been there and played for the Fury has their own story along the same lines as that, so I just add it to the experience and you get the full Ottawa experience.
You're a way. Good person, Carl.
Okay, mine is of a different genre here. My son, who loves you, has a picture of you in his room and all that stuff. Captain Carl, he wanted me to ask this, would you rather? It is pretty bad, but I'll do it for him. Okay, so would you rather fight a crocodile in a swamp, like in the water, or walk the entire Sahara Desert?
Wow.
I like that question.
Mark liked it. That means it's so stupid. If Mark yeah.
I think it's like... probably walk the Saharan Desert. Because I'm not the greatest swimmer. I think he's just going to manhandle me and gobble me up. So,
but don't, isn't he close the mouth if you're on...
Yeah, land? The only thing I do know is if you're on land, you got to run in like zigzags to like escape.
Okay.
I don't even know if that's true, but it's harder for them to follow. So if it was on land, crocodile, yeah, maybe I'd take that and try the zigzag.
Yeah, that's why he changed it to water. Originally it was on land, so he changed it to water.
Okay, yeah, if it's in water, then no chance, I'm walking. Yeah.
What if you had a life jacket? Does that change your answer?
I think that would probably hinder me.
Yeah.
The croc.
Yes, what a great answer. Well, I'm going to wrap it up by just quickly saying, we mentioned it, you took the long grinding path, and why I think that's super important to bring that up to the coaches and listeners that we have is it's a testament to your character and something we'd love to parallel with the players we coach in the whole philosophy of if you want something, don't quit, go and get it. Like you may not get it. Not everybody mm-hmm. that wants something can get it. But the key to this is just push, just grind, try and get it. And that's something I want people to take from Carl's story here. So we're thankful that you came on and thankful that you're giving back to the community in a coaching role, because I find that's big with people with your experience. You know, we talk about it here. Obviously, the best players don't always make amazing coaches, but it's your mm-hmm. experiences and you're wanting to share with the kids, whether it's coaching, just talking or anything, or helping me as a coach, because you're the TD at my club. I mean, I've already learned a ton. So giving back is everything, and you've done that. So we appreciate that, man. Thanks for coming on for us, dummies.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys.
Can I add to that? I think why you could be a very good coach, because one thing you said today, it's like a T-shirt should be made out of it. You said, well, you didn't regret it, but you reflected on it. And to be a good coach, you have to reflect.
Yeah.
And I think if you keep doing that, I think you'll be – better than all the coaches that you've had.
Carl, except I'm going to destroy you. No, I'm not. Jay, I'm going to destroy you. I'm sorry. Carl, I actually think you are a good coach right now. Not so I'm going to go with stronger, more appreciate powerful it. Wording. I wanted to maybe make an observation that I don't know if you've thought of it, but when Mark was talking about the captaincy and all that stuff, and like I don't even think we gave you a choice. We just gave it to you. And you were mentioning how, you know, because of your work ethic and how hard you work and daily and you're showing you're a leader. And those were all exactly big reasons for it. And you're bang on, and that's leadership traits. Where I think I saw even more as a leader, and what I think can help you as a coach, or I think will make you even a better coach, is you're very, not just showing the walking the walk and talking the talk and all that, but you were very attuned to the environment. And you were very attuned to what was happening, like the vibe within the team. And I can remember you a couple times mentioning things to Mark and I that were above and beyond sort of a captain thing, which is where I could see you not just being a good coach and a TD, but a good coach of like an actual, like a team, like an Indy 11 at those types of levels. Like you were very attuned to that. And I remember there was a point where we were doing all right. And but to get better, you mentioned something about a formation and we had gone through it. Anyways, just little things like that. You, I could actually see you sometimes looking around as you were in the session. And I thought I don't know if it's coming across the right way to you, but it was something very, that you could use as a coach. And I think it's something that'll make you a very good coach. And I say you are a good coach because you've coached my son and you've done those levels. I think Gloucester is ridiculously lucky to have you. I think Jason DaCosta is a genius for going out to get you in there. I don't know how much you'll be involved in that as you're in different cities, but Ottawa's lucky to have you there. So I'll stop rambling, but hopefully that's helpful for you moving forward.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. It's certainly something that I'm conscious of, and you know, to be a student of a game or a student of anything that I'm doing, I want to understand it, you know, all the deep down, the core reasons as to why things are being done in certain ways. So yeah, always kind of looking at, even if it's just a simple drill, you know, seeing the reasoning behind it and how it's going to make everybody better. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's awesome. Sweet. All right.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Carl.
All right. Thanks.
Yeah. So that was Carl Haworth. Well, love, I mean, Carl. There's so much to pull out of that. And it was, you know what it was? It was kind of refreshing talking to somebody that we coached and know. Like, it was kind of neat. I don't know. I felt like a whole different vibe going there. Like, it was almost.
You know what? I'm going to be sour grapes a bit, and it's on me. No one ever answers that question of like, what would you tell your coach when you're younger? Because it's the longest question ever. It takes 3 years.
I was going to say, okay, we almost ran out of time.
I know. finished. But it's like, what is it about? They just like, there's so much allegiance to the coach, which I get. I didn't say name, but I guess they're listening probably. And like,
and it was his dad.
What would you tell them? Well, I know, but what would you tell them? Like, would you say, okay, you know what? Maybe don't focus on winning so much. Or I don't know, like something. Like, maybe I should give an example, but it kills me. Like, no one answers the question.
It's true. I think there's 2 points. One, it's the longest soliloquy question you ever ask in the world. And you like pause and move your arms even more. And I think people are flustered because they're like, what is this? And then two, you're nailing why they didn't do it. It was his dad. Like, it's personal, those people. And probably they're thinking immediately, I would think, of the best coach who coached them and not the worst coaches. Yeah. And then they're like, what if that guy takes it the wrong way? But I know what you're getting at. You're not wanting them to take a shot.
I'm even asking about the best coaches that they had. What advice would you give them? Like, just to like help them, maybe like when he was on his trial in Montreal or wherever, just like to help him get another edge. Like, because those are the golden years for a lot of good reasons.
It's actually a compliment to you. Like, what I'm going to say, it's you're so open to reflecting and to getting better that you will always go back and say, oh my God, 6 years ago, I was an idiot. Like, some other people take that so strongly in the wrong way, because some people don't have that attitude. I think that's what makes you a good coach. I think that's what makes Carl good at what he does. And I think he is and will be a fantastic coach. Yeah. You're asking them to say, upon reflection, what could you have done better? Not like in a negative way. I think sometimes people take it the negative way. And I think it's like a very cheesy point to make in general. Like, if you're listening to us and you have any sort of coaching aspirations and you're listening for anything from us three idiots, like, that self-reflection is monstrous, and taking criticism. Cause I'll be honest, like, I take like a suck attack when I'm critiqued and I get all mad, but I do like reflect and think, yeah, that makes sense. Like, you've critiqued me and I always ask you to critique me. And I think I've probably said it on here. You told me about to keep the session moving quicker, to put balls around the field. I was so mad at you. Like, I stormed home that day and I was like, stupid dummy, stupid head with stupid balls. Who cares about stupid balls around the field? But like, the next session, I had a ball every 3 yards around the field and I was like staring you down. I was better because of it. So it's a big thing, but it's a compliment to you because that's just your mindset.
Yeah, I'm going to ask Coach Steve this question now since he has a coaching hat on.
Because I'm on a roll right now.
What's Carl's best position?
Well, that's such a good question. Like, I want to say his best position at those levels. I will say I think he needs to, like, to contradict myself. I think he can play through the middle. But I think he's better in a little bit of space. Just a little bit more wide in a 4-3-3, a 4-2-3-1 type thing, like right or left, because I think at those levels, as much of a goal scorer as he is and can be, I don't think he's an elite goal scorer. And I think he has a lot of creativity. I think he's a perfect foil for someone who's maybe a real elite goal scorer. I think he'd be a perfect guy to be delivering and creating for them. So I would say like a left or a right wing.
Yeah.
I agree. I like him attacking. Yeah, I like him attacking from, like, I want him to play for Liverpool today because Trent Arnold keeps on crossing from 50,000 yards away every single time. Where Carl, like, I love the way his brain works, and like, he's creative and he connects with other players, and there's all sorts of combinations, but it's different each time. Like, I mean, of course, it was NASL. It's not the Premier League, but I just want like player like that on my right back.
I love that answer.
You know what I mean? Just
love it. I love it. That's bang on what it is with Carl. One time he's whipping it in, the next time he's taking the player on at pace, and the next time he's playing a combination. Like, I love that answer.
Yeah. So I want to preface this statement that I know all players, and I said it to Carl, all players don't turn into good coaches. I know that. We know that. That's out there in the open. But do you still think that more former players players. Players should try coaching, like in different capacities. Like, because here's an example of mine. When I'm coaching with my local youth club, I'm looking around the field and I see a bunch of guys I played with still playing old timers and stuff. Not saying they're good coaches, but at the young ages, why not get involved, demo things, be a neutral, be enthusiastic, because you do have soccer knowledge in your head if you've played.
I can't wait for Jay to answer this.
Yeah, should more, like, and a Carl, like Carl, for example, jumping in and being a TD and helping people like me and demoing for all these young kids. Like, should more former players try to their hand at assistant coaching?
Stop, Jay. I have to before you start. This is the analogy the listener needs to know about Jay right now. First of all, he's hiding behind the biggest mic ever. As Mark's asking the question, if you're a listener, picture a boxer sitting on the little wooden stool, taping up his hands, nice and tight, spitting his board, like getting really prepped, putting the gloves on, getting them ready, and then just flexing and just shaking and dying for the question to answer.
I'm wiggling.
Yeah. But I'm what I'm saying, and I want to say before you start, is where I was looking here, and the last thing I said too, I'm not saying should they be a head coach and run an academy, but I'm saying as well in there, an assistant coach, anything, any sort of involvement in youth sport, youth soccer.
Yeah, no, I think you nailed it at the end and calmed me down a bit. But I knew you're going with this, and I agree with the balance approach. Like, but I would argue get them away from the young kids at first, because that's where you need your best teachers, you need your best communicators, your most. I remember Phil DeSantos when he took over Fury, and he was about to like fire everyone. He was like walking through the Fury training, and I remember being like terrified, like, am I gonna get sacked? Like, he was just assessing everybody, and he actually paid me a compliment and was humble himself, and he said, you know, I could never do that age. It was U11 at the time, and he's like, I could never do that age. You're excited and you're involved in enthusiasm. He couldn't do it, and he's a top coach. I rate him highly and his communication ability and his understanding of the game. So to ask someone, that's where I'd sort of jockey with you a bit and just say, okay, maybe not. I agree. Maybe an assistant coach, bang on. We need a tons of assistant coach because we can't pay them or not nearly as much. And they can have a little bit of fun in there. Like, they could impart some knowledge as well. 100%. Those guys have a lot to offer. 100%. But at the young age, like, first of all, I think they maybe like starting at 7, 8, 9, 10, maybe not, unless they are like Carl, they have some sort of vested interest in doing it.
Yeah.
First of all, it's tough to answer right now because Mark took a sip of his water and it's trickled all down the chin and onto his like Adam's apple.
I know, it keeps on spilling.
Yeah, yeah, it was just dangling on his Adam's apple. Like, it's still there. He doesn't even see it. Like, it was like watching a kid try and drink with like two cleft lips again. Jay, I calmed you down by making the boxer reference. You made a great point. I think your point would be that not everybody's a teacher and coaches are teachers. And I think that's a great thing that's there. I think Carl fits that bill 100,000%. But I know what Mark's getting at, and I agree 100% with what Mark's getting at. Like, find your fit or your role, and can you give back? You know, like, I think there's a coach that recently got hired at one of the clubs that's not a coach, and they're working on sort of a media side and communications and all that, and they can take their experience and help tremendously there. So I agree with Mark. I think that would be something people should look at doing more. Like, you don't have to be the coach of the U11 team and responsible for all these things that you're maybe overwhelmed by, but what can you fit in? Like, those people have such an experience. Let's say Carl wasn't that good of a coach and he coached with some other guys that I was involved with that were enthusiastic, but they weren't a coach like Carl. But they found their role. I respected them for that. So I think it's such a good point by you, Mark. And I wish more people, even at our levels, you know, like, we didn't make it to Carl's levels, but like, how can they give back? I think that's a, like, you're bang on with that.
Yeah, so I'm going to rip this coaching theme continuously. I think one of you might have brought this up, or I saw this on Twitter or something or other. But anyway, I've been hanging on to it for a while. Can a coach, or is it acceptable for a coach to run a session holding a piece of paper with his lesson plan out?
100%. I do it every single time. And actually, I would go as far as like now I would actually use a clipboard so it doesn't like wrinkle or whatever. And I can flip up and down a bit. And yes, I definitely have that because I have, for example, like in the last couple of sessions I did with U16 OPDL, you know, I had like some look fors and possible pitfalls of what I'm trying to go over. And so I need to look at those and my reactions to them. So I have like 4 pages in my session almost. Could it be too much? Fine. Then I don't use it. Sometimes I don't use it all. Sometimes I just have it in there, but then it's something like something I want to remind them to say of the objective, like, you know, something maybe in the transition, some point that I want to say that I need to remember and have there, or even the dimensions of the pitch or something. So I love having, I used to be against it. Steve, I remember you and I, like when we started coaching, I used to tuck it into my sock, right? And tuck it into my sock. It was so sweaty by the end. You couldn't even like recognize it because I didn't want the players to think, oh, this guy doesn't know what he's saying. It's like me being in front of the class. But I totally flipped. I totally flipped the switch about 4 or 5 years ago and saying, or 6, I don't even know how long ago, and just saying, you know what? I even tell my students now in class, no, this is the objective. Look, I have it here. And I show them. And it's explicit. And so, and I do it in the session too. And I don't think it, I wish I could go back and tap myself on the shoulder, like, take it out of your sock, psycho. It's doing nothing in there.
I mean, Steve, isn't it better? Oh, yeah, Steve, I'll throw it to you because same thing. Isn't it better to be organized and run a great session than to give the illusion you're this like this mad magician?
I do think you, Mark, it was me who talked about this. And I think I talked about it on the show. I had the exact same reaction as Jay. I thought if I have my paper out, they're going to not buy me the players. And to tap myself on the shoulder, the person who got me out of it was a guy named Paul Rigby who taught at St. Paul University here in Ottawa. And I was coaching his kid at Fury. And I actually asked him because I did exactly like Jake tucked into my sock. I take it out after. I'm like, oh, my points are gone. Like, how do I save this? This is a disaster. It smells like my feet. Then he told me, he said, I know you have the plan. I've seen you. He goes, I see you tuck it away. And he gave me the tap on the shoulder. I'm fortunate. And he said to me, he's like, exactly what you said, Mark. He's like, you're teaching them. He's like, as a parent, not as a teacher, I'm telling you, I respect you more when I see it because I know you've prepared. I know you're organized and I know you've put the time in. So it actually made me think, oh my God, I'm completely wrong. I'm actually getting more from the person thinking I care that much and I put it in. I am like Jay. I write a lot on the sheet. A lot of it's me getting my brain out. I, you know, it's the whole thing of when you write it down, you'll remember and you'll do it more. So I have probably too much. I know a couple of my buddies have made fun of me for it and stuff, but I'm with Jay. Like, I'd rather have more than less to flip the entire thing. And it's wrong, but I have to say, when I was a player, if someone had not a piece of paper, because I remember being coached by some really top coaches and they had it, but when they had a clipboard, I was gone. And I'm not going to lie, I was the guy. I actually stole a coach's clipboard with a friend of mine. His name's Derek Volpe. I have no idea if he's listening. I'm not going to say who, but we, and it's wrong. And I'm admitting to the wrong of this, but we stole the clipboard because we're like, clipboard, come on, man. Like, but it's wrong because as a coach now, I think that they're just prepared, but we were just little jerks. And like the little jerk in me was always in my mind when I coached.
Isn't it funny how, like Jay said, how like 180 you go through experience? Because the clipboard and open paper, and I'm going to throw this to you, Jay, whistles had the same trajectory of life as open training sessions. It was like at 8 years ago, you can't show a paper and whistles are for punter coaches, you know, like the worst coaches. Who has a whistle around their neck or a stopwatch or things like that? What was all seen by us as like, oh, come on, he's a poser, to now it's like, you need these things. They're useful. It's okay to be vulnerable in coaching.
Yeah. No, I use the whistle too. I even use the whistle in my class because Doug Lamont that I mentioned, and I don't use it now during the pandemic because it would be hard to use the whistle in the mask. like it would just be like awful. But before the pandemic, I would use it, and the transition times that I'd save. And now even in coaching, even though I've been using it in the classroom like 3 years, I go to coaching, I use the whistle. At first I'm like, what is that? Done. I don't have to, hey guys, come over here. Guys, hey, oh, and you're yelling. No, whistle, done. Everybody knows. And actually, if you want to be a nerd about it, the game has the whistle. So it's like,
yeah,
it's like you're training dogs to listen to the whistle and they go. You know what I mean? Like, if you're being a real nerd about it.
You're bang on.
Go ahead, Jack.
No, you're bang on. Like, your point about it is probably like, use your tools. And if it's showing you're vulnerable, well, you know, so be it. It's all in how the coach comes across and how he gets buy-in from his players. And you can, I think you can use whatever the hell you want, as long as you have that buy-in from your players, which is maybe a magic ingredient we're not speaking to. I think the whistle that Jay brought up, he brought it up to me and I was like, Jay's using a whistle, loser, dummy, stupid head. And then I was like, oh my God, how effective is it? And he's so smart. And the same with the watch, Mark, like, you're almost irresponsible not having one, because you should be looking and timing how long your drill is in your session and how long they're performing at maximum levels, you know, before they're just where I hate, like, going through the motion and everything's just at walking pace. I remember just consciously thinking of it as a player where I loved the game at the end and I hated the point where it was so stretched that it was just like this stupid game that didn't, I actually lost interest in a game when all I wanted to do is play a game. And that's because the coach didn't have that, you know, stop, start, bring them back in. So it's such great points, but I'll be honest, I haven't been brave enough to use a whistle yet. Like, I was kind of taught use your voice. And it was something I struggled with early on as a coach. Like, we had a guy named Brian Evans who was in the Royal Air Force in Britain. So this total commanding voice. And he was trying to teach me how to do it. And I was like, I'm not you. Like, but I don't see any reason why not to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I also use two watches, and I got that from Mark DeSantos, is the two watches, one for running time, like how long you're, like the time, the real time, and then the sets of your sessions. So I think if you're not using two watches, you're pissing against the wind. Like,
I can't do it. I try. Like,
to go back and forth is annoying. You have the two and you're,
I'm actually not smart enough to do it.
Yeah, I know. I think you just gotta keep it.
I'm pretty good at keeping the total piece of the session, like a 15 minutes or whatever. And I'm using my watch for the repetitions in between, or how many sets of the 20 minutes or 12 minutes. So I think as a byproduct, I'm very close. I shouldn't say I shouldn't you do it, but I find it so hard for me. It's like solving world hunger, or like coding a friggin' computer or something. Like, I'm like, my mind gets so rattled and the whole time I'm berating myself, thinking, you're so stupid. You can't use two watches, you stupid idiot.
Yeah.
I even use the timer to time me when I'm talking to the kids, so I don't go over like I do with my questions to Carl. Like, I time myself and in 30 seconds, I stop. I should time it.
Yeah, that's interesting. I love that. I'm going to hopefully use that when we get back out. Now, here's probably a tough one. Would you rather drink a glass of sour milk or brush your teeth with soap?
I'm going to go with soap. Sour milk scares me. Like, as soon as you said sour milk in any context, I was afraid of it. I hate the curdling and all that. Like, the potential, I have to go with soap and suck it up.
How's the
show going for you, Jay?
My internet's terrible.
Jay, are you on the show?
Pretty good. The last thing I heard was you talking about stopwatches.
Oh, wow.
That's the last thing I heard.
I'm going to throw this one to you, Jay, now that you're back from your blip. Would you, if you were single, you got a letter in the mail tomorrow, would you be the bachelor?
No. No way. No, I would, I'd be terrible at The Bachelor. Like, I've always had long-term relationships. There's no way.
You'd be timing your dates.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is too long and it's awkward. There's no magic timed up.
You know why I think you'd be fantastic at it? I think you are the greatest human I've ever met. at being able to talk to anyone anytime under any circumstances, and to make that person feel like you're actually very much interested in them and that you would ask them the most interesting questions. I think you'd be the first bachelor that maybe didn't kiss any of the girls on the show, and everybody would tune in every week.
Oh my God. I did love the stop and chats. I was going to dying to ask Carl about the stop and chats. Like if he noticed or who would do the most stop and chats out of us three, maybe it's a huge ask because it's so long ago, but
definitely not me.
No, definitely.
I'm going to throw this to Steve first. There's like a two part. The first question is, do you still have nightmares?
No.
Why are you asking this to me?
And if you do, and if the answer is yes, do you ever have any where you're up for like a little while, or you move closer to your wife in bed? Like, does this still happen?
I hate you so much. For going into my like the game Operation, you operated on me, you missed the sides, and you pulled out something so raw. Yes, I have nightmares. I hate saying it. There's so many people are gonna hate me and I'm gonna lose respect. I have nightmares, but I always wake up. They're always like close to when I wake up in the morning, and they're the types that like, I have two in particular. This is terrible. It's a psych session now where like, I actually think it was real for a good half an hour. And in the shower, I'm like really depressed. But I also have this one where like my body, I can't move. No part of my body can move. It's like just from my neck up. And I'm like fighting it. And I'm like, no, you have to move your limbs or you're going to be dead. And I'm just, and I wake up like in a burst, like, and I'm swinging, and Lisa's almost like, not this again. And it's horrible. And that does keep me up. Oh my God. I hate my life.
Mark, true story. When we're living on Deerfield, when we're going to Algonquin, and we're all downstairs, Claudio Venegas, me, Joe Bonacci, those three, I definitely remember were there. And Steve yells. He's upstairs. I don't know why he was sleeping. Maybe he was tired after a game or something. I forget what it was. We go upstairs. I knock on the door. I'm like,
Steve, hold on, Jay. It was okay? That dream.
Yeah. Yes, I know. That's why it triggered me. Okay. And I was like, why? Because you were just yelling and screaming. Steve's response, and this is proof to all the people, all the listeners, that he's actually the bigger prick than I am. In his time of need, we go and check on him. This is his response after we said, yeah, because you were yelling. He goes, oh, fascinating. Goes back to sleep. That's what he said. I swear to God. That's it. That's the story. Fascinating. I couldn't stop laughing. I was in tears laughing. Who says fascinating after that, first of all? And he was so rattled from us hearing his freaking grizzly bear roar of him getting out of this pretend casket that he was sleeping in. God, I was dying. Fascinating. Oh my God, it was so good.
Mark, behind the door.
Mark, have you had a nightmare? Yes, you didn't even open the door.
I was like, Mark saw me behind the door, and I had a blanket like this. I had a teddy bear that magically appeared. I was so scared. I wanted them to go away so fast.
Oh, man. That was good. Pretend casket.
Did you have a nightmare, Mark, recently? Is that why?
My son did. Like, my son had he never calls me. And like, Keen is like the bravest child in the world. Like, he will fight an intruder without calling me. And, he's just like, Dad! And right away, that scares the crap. I'm hanging off the chandelier, like floating with the fan. So I run into his room, and he's like, man, it was like laughing clowns wouldn't leave him alone. It was just like the weird thing.
Clowns?
Is that you, Kane? Kane? I wanted him to tell it.
Imagine it's a clown. He puts on a clown mask.
I was just telling them about your clown dream.
Oh, no.
Yeah. How scary out of 10 was that?
Like a 10, the highest. Yeah. But like clowns, what did you guys watch? It?
No, we joke about it all the time, but like, no, we've never seen it. It's just one of those things. Yeah. But anyway, that's what it stirred in my head, because I have some like Steve too. And, you know, we you wake up and you're 40 and you're like, why am I shivering like a child? Like, why am I so scared? It's anyway, one soccer watch. Jay has registered, paid, yes, and he is a one soccer member. Steve's hoping I don't bring it to him right now, because I think he's still without one soccer.
I am. It's a disaster. I have to get it, because when Jay got it yesterday, you sent about 86 WhatsApp messages back to him saying, you can get this and that and this and then that and this and this and this is coming up. And I was like, oh my God, I have to get all that. Total peer pressure.
Yeah. So anyway, we're going to wrap that up, and we'll update everybody on nightmares next week if we have any in the next 7 days. But anyway, thanks to you guys. Thanks to Carl. Follow him on Instagram. And no, yes, Instagram and Facebook only, not Twitter, until he gets the blue check. Clean your fish tanks, hug your family, and see you later.
Thanks very much for listening today. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the podcast and, of course, leave us a 5-star review. If you want to get in touch, you'll find us on Instagram at SoccerSnob1, on Twitter at SoccerSnobs1, by searching for us on Facebook, and of course on the web at www.soccersnobs.ca/listen. You can leave us your opinion, give us any comments, and if that's where you want to get nasty, feel free to do so.